This is Virginia Reloaded, presented by Gun Owners of America, fighting for your rights in the Commonwealth and beyond.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of Virginia Reloaded on a special time. I had family in town for my son's first communion over the weekend, so we can record then. But a lot has happened. This is Virginia Reloaded, and we talk a lot about gun rights in the Commonwealth of Virginia and beyond. And tonight is going to be a show mostly about beyond, to tell you the truth, because a lot of stuff is going on. But before we do that, let me introduce myself. My name is John Crump. I'm the Virginia Director for Gun Owners of America, DC's only no-compromise gun lobby. We are there fighting for you day in and day out for your gun rights. And I am joined by my esteemed co-host from the Gorillas and Guns channel, Scott Ayers, who is also known as Silverback Bananas. What is up, yeah, Scott? Yeah.
Not much, man. Just, exciting times ahead of us, I guess, here. Waiting to see what happens.
How very much so, very much so. So, when I didn't get a gun of the day from you, and
yeah,
I didn't pick one up either, so we're probably just going to skip that. But other than that, I ordered a new suppressor for mine.
Oh, right on.
I'm going to suppress one of my 300 blackouts, which is going to be nice.
Very nice.
So I will have a 300 blackout suppressor with everyone, with all my other ones. I do see Joe Drag out there, and I see Warsaw Patriot. I see a lot of people watching. So with that, do you want to get into what is going on? Oh, yeah, by the way, my John Crump news channel is now monetized.
Right on. I'm like this close.
Good. So, yeah, now I have two monetized channels. So, let's go ahead and talk about what's going on. Let's go ahead and start with the big news today, and it is the New York Pistol Rifle Association is suing in New York along with two New York residents, two New York men, over their May issue concealed carry permit. If you don't know, in New York State, you need what they call proper, what do they call it? Like proper right, or like, you know, you have to show proper calls to get a concealed carry permit. Basically, you have to be transmitting a bunch of money or transporting a bunch of money, or, you know, have a immediate threat to your life.
Yeah, but they're even saying that they're not considering self-defense being part of proper cause.
No, no. You have to have like immediate threat. Like, you have to have someone like close to you saying, "I'm going to kill you," and they can't find the person before they give it to you. So they're suing over that, and the Supreme Court has taken up the case. This is the first time they've taken up a two-way case since Heller back in 2010. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, well, they took up one other, but we'll get into that in a second. The first time they're going to really rule on a case. If you don't know, in Heller, what happened was the Supreme Court basically said, yes, the Second Amendment is an individual right and does apply to the average, everyday American, which was the first time they'd done that. And people like Kamala Harris have argued in an amicus brief that the individual doesn't have a right to a firearm, and that it is only a right for a state-backed militia.
Mm. Well, you want to know something funny, and I'm glad that this is coming up now. Some years ago, John Stossel actually did a report on this where he tried to file to get a concealed carry permit in the state of New York, and they denied him. Even though he had imminent threats to his life made upon him, they still denied it and said he didn't have proper reasoning.
Yeah, John Stossel did a lot of stuff on gun rights. He's actually really, really pro-gun. If you don't know who John Stossel is, look him up. He used to be on 2020. He's a great investigative journalist, and he does a lot of great work. Yes, if you don't know, Dick Heller, who was the plaintiff in Heller versus D.C. or District of Columbia versus Heller, he actually works for GOA.
Nice.
So there is that. The Supreme Court did take up one other case, and that was the New York Pistol Rifle Association, once again, versus the city of New York, and that was for the transportation law where New York City said you couldn't take a firearm outside the city if you bought it in the city or you live in the city. So you couldn't take it to a range outside New York City. They sued over that. That made it to the Supreme Court, but then New York City dropped the law, so they I always have trouble saying this word, so they ruled it moot.
mute. I mean, it's kind of the same.
Yeah,
it's just a dead point. Yeah,
yeah, so they dropped that, but this one is a good case because this could affect case law around the country. It can make the whole country shall issue.
Yeah, because wasn't the other case, it was the gentleman had a house in the city and a house out in the country, and he was transporting his firearm to the house out in the country.
He wanted to transport it to out in the country, and back then the law said you couldn't transport a firearm that is in New York City outside the city because rules, basically. So they changed that. The one thing that does worry me, and a lot of people aren't talking about, is the Supreme Court did change the wording of the case. Okay. So the way they changed it, they could say, "Hey, this ruling only applies to the ability for a state to grant for your ability for a person to apply for a concealed carry permit." MK Joe wants to know the last case before Heller that the Supreme Court heard that's gun related, and I think that would be McDonald versus the city of Chicago.
Yep,
if I'm not mistaken. Which is also Mr. McDonald has passed away, unfortunately. But it's one of the three landmark cases out there, and that basically found that the right of an individual to keep and bear arms was protected under the Supreme Court, and it also incorporated some of the Fourth Amendment and due process clause and stuff like that. And the other big case was Ezell versus the city of Chicago. Rhonda Ezell was the plaintiff there. And Rhonda's a great friend. And that was when Chicago basically made it impossible for a gun range to open up in the city. And she won that case.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the big cases.
Yeah, she did a good job, and she's still pursuing that, I believe, too, right? Because they haven't actually opened any gun ranges in Chicago yet.
No, they haven't opened any gun ranges in Chicago, but they're allowed to now.
All right. Awesome.
She runs a gun rights organization that just sues Chicago for all their...
Well, she's also in the D.C. Project as well, isn't she?
Yes, she is also in the D.C. Project. The D.C. Project is an amazing, amazing group of women that they say education over legislation, and they go to D.C. once a year. They couldn't go last year because of COVID, But they go to DC once a year and they campaign for gun rights. And it's really amazing for what they do. It is founded by a former Chicago police woman. And it's a great organization.
Yep. Good. I mean, and we need more women to stand up for the 2A as well. I mean, you know, everybody just looks at it. Oh, that's just for fat old white redneck men, you know. And no, it's not. It's for everyone.
Yeah, there are 50 women from 50 states, and there's actually more now.
Nice. I'm glad to hear it growing.
Yeah, Diane Mueller, who you might know, is the founder. Mm-hmm. Diane Mueller was the woman who told Congress to their faces, if you pass a assault weapons ban, I will not comply.
Awesome. You won't hear no complaints from me about that.
Yeah, they have Holly Sullivan from... She's the president of Connecticut Citizens Defense League. They have Amanda Sifrical, who is a radio host and a big 2A advocate. Beth Walker, who's a competitive shooter. They have a bunch of really, really great women. Cheryl Todd, Beth Alcazar, lots of great women.
Yep.
Candy Yao. Another one. So if you haven't checked them out, you should check them out because they do a lot of good work.
Yeah, definitely help support their cause for sure.
We have a question from Keith Gregory. He wants to know when the case will be argued and decided on. It's not going to be quick. We don't have an exact date. They just announced that they are taking it up. So we don't have a schedule. I would say probably sometime late this year, maybe October, September-ish.
Yeah, maybe. Vanessa Kitty's saying argued in the fall and answered by June.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. So we got a while to go.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make a decision the day that it's argued. They hear the arguments, and then they go, and then they talk to each other, and then they come up with a opinion, and then they answer the opinion. They put out the opinion, and then they put out the dissent. The opinion is the majority of the court finds this, and the dissent is the minority of the court finds it this way, and then they put it out. So by June, we will know something. Hopefully, it will be good news. One thing is, it's the Supreme Court, so you never know, right?
Right. Especially since they've been so, I guess, elusive on taking any Second Amendment cases. And this one is kind of a big one, and it's been a little bit of a time in the making. So I guess this is just the next step as to where it needs to go. And hopefully it goes in the right direction. I mean, we got some good justices on the in the court, and hopefully they do their job and they do it the right way and they set their biases aside and they rule the way it should be ruled.
Yeah, there is a 6-3 conservative lean in the court. I can tell you Clarence Thomas is probably going to vote for it.
Right.
Probably Alito will say, yeah, you have to go May issue. Gorsuch will probably rule on the side of the good guys. Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh, I hope will, but I don't know for sure about those guys.
Kavanaugh seems kind of a little wishy-washy in his stance now that he's on the actual bench.
Yeah, Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor definitely vote against it. John Roberts is probably going to be a swing vote, so he can go either way. Mm-hmm. So Roberts, Kavanaugh, Barrett is going to be the one that...
Yeah, those are the big question marks.
Yeah, and I think Amy Coney Barrett is going to side for the good guys. So that leads Kavanaugh and Roberts, which you don't... Which you never know. I see Matt Das Cowboy out there, a Virginian out there.
What up, Matt?
Yeah, and you can see Vanessa Kitty, for all those who are listening. Vanessa Kitty is out there, and she is schooling everyone on the Supreme Court. Yes. Four justices must agree to take up the case, but the majority must rule to validate or void a law. So there is that.
Yep. She's a very, very knowledgeable woman, for sure. She keeps on top of things.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely 100% right, which is an amazing that we haven't been able to get a court case in the Supreme Court. You don't need a majority of justices to hear the case.
Right. You know, I'm going to say probably with everything that's been going on over the last, say, 8 years, they probably all mostly agreed to stay away from them because, I don't know, for whatever reason they have to avoid these 2A cases. But, you know, it's time for them to step up and do their job. You know, that's their job. They shouldn't be denying these cases. They should hear them out and they should rule on them fairly, you know?
Yeah, they really need to. But it's going to be a very interesting case. And that is basically it's the New York Pistol Rifle Association versus Corlett. I see people out there asking about it. And that's the case that we are talking about. And it has to do with concealed carry. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, and we're going to be tracking it closely. Gun Owners of America will be entering in an amicus brief, or however you want to say it. I say amicus. Some other people say amicus, but
always known as amicus, like you said.
Yeah, it's stupid. People argue about the most dumb crap ever.
Right.
But GOA will be entering an amicus brief, whatever you want to say, in the case. I talked to the attorney, and he is hard to work already.
Nice. That's what I'm talking about, a go-getter. That's what we need on our side, lots and lots of go-getters.
And that's super attorney Rob Olson, who is also my attorney, one of my attorneys. Him and Steven Stamboli are super attorneys, and they are... my legal team, basically, for like FOIAs and stuff like that.
Right on.
So hopefully that turns out the way we want it to. But like I said, you never know. If it does, it will rock the nation, which means they can't turn down concealed carry permits, which means I'll be filing for concealed carry permits in like New York. I go to New York a lot.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it'll be good. That's like, you know, people who work in D.C., they should definitely be able to file for the permits up there in D.C.
Well, D.C. you can. D.C. is Maryland. May issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, a circuit court decided that they have to issue concealed carry permits. D.C. decided not to appeal to the Supreme Court because they didn't want to take a chance of the law being overturned.
Right.
So basically you have two different circuits saying two different things, and that's part of the reason why the Supreme Court probably took this case. They probably had their hand forced more than anything else.
Right. Okay. Good.
But that's a good thing. Yeah.
This Dems will be pulling their hair out over this one.
Oh, they already are, man. I was monitoring the media, and they are going freaking insane talking about, how this is going to change gun laws and gut this, blah, 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 and how this is so terrible.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible for their agenda, for sure, you know, but it's not terrible for the Constitution. You know, it gives us another win in the Constitution. This is something that definitely shouldn't be even argued about at all, but because of New York and, you know, their tyranny, we're having to go through this, you know, and it's just ridiculous. But, you know, at this point, it is what it is, and now we've got a chance to make a change for the better.
100%, 100%. We definitely will make it for the better. But it's a great thing that they're actually taking up a case. I can't stress that enough. Right. Maybe they will start taking up more cases now.
Yeah, and like you said, the last one was in 2010. So, I mean, 11 years, that's far too long to wait to take up a case, you know? There's been plenty of opportunity before this, and I think they should have been running with those, you know, right along.
Yeah, they definitely should. But we'll hopefully get more passed now. It is a very interesting case. And it's a strong case. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully. Yeah,
the New York Rifle and Pistol Association really seems to have their act together. And, you know, they're doing good work up there. And, you know, I'm proud of them. I thank them for what they're doing, for sure, because they have a hard fight, especially being in New York and doing what they're doing.
Yeah, I've talked to them before, and they are doing a lot of good work up there. We need local organizations. We're winning on a local level. People don't realize that.
Right.
Look how many places that are now constitutional carry.
Yep. And then all the other states that are passing the not enforcing the federal
Second Amendment Protection Acts. If you go to gunownersaction.org/SAPO, you can see a Second Amendment Protection Ordinance that you can pass on to your local government, your city government, your county government, and say, hey, we really need to pass this. We need you to protect our lives. We need you to protect our rights as Americans.
Right. Wasn't it Montana that just passed that recently, the last couple days?
They passed it. The governor vetoed it. But here's the thing. In Montana, you don't really need a supermajority to overturn a veto, and you only need a simple majority. And the Senate in Montana voted to override the governor's veto today, and the House is voting on it tomorrow.
Nice.
And this, we're recording Monday night instead of usually Saturday night. So if you're hearing this on replay, I'm not sure if this is going to be up on Wednesday or not, but just know that's what we're talking about. Yeah. So that is a very good thing. All right. Mm-hmm. So we talked about that, right?
Yep.
Let's go ahead and talk about the next thing that we will talk about, and that is a leak from the ATF.
Oh, okay.
I broke this today over on AMLand. And what the leak says is that there is a program. I'll bring it up. Let me go ahead and bring it up here for those watching.
I just pulled up your article here.
All right. That is good. Okay. Basically, I wrote the article, so I know what it says. But basically, the FBI is spying on gun owners through NICS.
Mm-hmm.
What they are doing is, if they suspect you of committing a crime, they can get access to NICS, to monitor NICS.
Mm-hmm.
What could you commit a crime? And what, I mean, what could you do for the expect you to commit of committing a crime? And that could be buying a lot of firearms. If you buy a lot of firearms, they can say, we think because the amount of firearms this guy is buying that he's probably doing straw purchases.
Yeah.
So they can submit a request to monitor you. Here's the funny thing. It goes to a guy and he reviews it, right? And he looks at it and says, all right, yes, this warrants further investigation. So we are going to let you monitor NICS. Then he sends us to the other guy in the ATF. So basically, he goes to a guy who is the ATF NICS representative. He looks at it. NICS is the National Incident Criminal Check System, if you don't know. It's FBI thing. Whenever you fill out 4473, they bring your name through it. So the ATF NICS representative forwards an email to the NICS special liaison specialist, or section, NICS section liaison specialist. The NICS section liaison specialist has one job. He forwards the email to the NICS legal analyst team for final review. So it's like an office space, right?
Yep.
What do you do? I interface for the engineer, so the customer doesn't have to. Well, couldn't the engineer, couldn't the customer send the request directly to the engineers? Mm-hmm. They're not a people person. I don't know if you remember that.
No, I remember that.
Yeah, so basically the only job this guy has is to forward emails.
That's it, and that's all he does is just sit there and forwards them.
All day. Okay, I got another email, let me forward it over.
Does he have to review them to decide if they're forward worthy or not, or he just all he does is just forward?
Looking at the documents, it looks like he doesn't say yes or no, he just forwards the emails.
Okay. So he's like a switchboard operator then, almost.
Well, he gets it from multiple addresses, but he sends it to one address. So I don't know why he just doesn't set up like an auto forward.
Right.
And then take the rest of the day off. And I got a question from the Guardians. How does NICS checks show or assume that you are committing a crime? Let's say you buy 20 Glocks. They'll say that's really unusual. So they probably are committing a crime by doing straw purchases. And it's not only criminal, it's also civil. Like civil asset forfeitures is the only thing I can think of that really falls under that. So then they will start monitoring you. By law, the FBI has 90 days to destroy any personal information that they didn't do approve or deny. A lot of stuff just never comes back with the approve or deny. So on day 88, according to my sources, they usually destroy them. Another thing is the rest of the information, the transaction number and the FFL information gets stored for 10 years. But if they come back with an approval, the FBI have 24 hours to destroy that information.
Right. Okay.
Now, if you're denied, that goes into a database forever. They keep that in perpetuity, forever.
Now, the FBI keeps that and the ATF, or just
the FBI keeps that, and they forward it over to the ATF. There is a database on the ATF side, which I think I talked about in here. The ATF NICS referral database, and they send over every failure to the ATF, every denial to the ATF, and the ATF looks at it and decides whether they want to pursue it or not.
Okay. So, I mean, if these people were denied, then, I mean, they obviously weren't able to purchase the firearm anyway, right?
Yeah. But they could be guilty of committing a crime if they are like a fugitive from justice trying to buy a firearm or any number of reasons. They can be found guilty of a crime for just attempting to purchase a firearm.
Right.
But so GOA, Gun Owners of America, the document has been passed to Gun Owners of America. They have filed FOIA requests to try to get more information, see how many people that are being monitored. Which is interesting. Now, here is another really weird thing. Looking at the list of people that can request access to a NICS monitoring, it lists the industry operations inspectors. If you don't know, the ATF is broken into two categories. You have the law enforcement arm, which is your special agents, you know, what David Chipman did. He was a disaster. And stuff like that. And then you have the industry side, which basically talks back and forth to the industry. The IOIs, or industry operations inspectors, are the ones who do like the yearly inspections. They fall on the industry side. They don't do any law enforcement investigations at all, like zero. In fact, they can't even do an undercover investigation using the annual inspection for law enforcement purposes. That is strictly verboten. If an IOI is to find something that is going wrong with or they suspect the crime is going on, what they do is they file a suspicious activity report, and they file it with the ATF's Gun Crime Intelligence Center or state or local law enforcement. They are not authorized to investigate crimes whatsoever, and they are not authorized to do any civil investigations at all either. They are forbidden. So it brings up the question, why do they have access to a NICS monitoring request?
Yeah, I'm definitely curious to know why.
I can't figure it out. I talked to someone else and they can't figure it out.
Maybe their job is just to, if they see the monitoring, then they can get the ball rolling.
No, they cannot do anything with the law enforcement side.
They can't even alert them and say, hey, look, there's this suspicious activity.
Well,
the
they can alert them, but then they have to back off. They can't participate in an investigation.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It's just their job to, they monitor it, and then they see if something is awry, and then they say, hey, look it to the law enforcement team, and the law enforcement team takes over from there, maybe?
Correct, but they never request any access to this. And this, the monitoring is only for people that are approved. Not denied, approved only.
Right.
So that means they haven't committed a crime. Mm-hmm. Innocent until proven guilty, right? But the ATF is not looking at it that way at all.
Right, no, that sounds more like guilty until proven innocent, right?
100%, man. 100%. And they use the civil forfeiture stuff whenever they have a lack of evidence and they want to punish you. So that tells me two things. First thing is the person who wrote this, or actually three things. The person who wrote this does not realize the ATF is split into an industry side and a law enforcement side, which is very possible that someone doesn't know and is writing official government documents and making up rules. That would not surprise me with the ATF, to be honest.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Second thing is, it could be someone who's just lazy and miswrote something and no one caught it, which I kind of find weird that no one would catch that. A third thing is that the ATF doesn't care, and they're letting their IOIs do monitoring of NICs, which I think is probably most likely the case.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I think the third option is really the route they're going with it. You know, I mean, they, as I always like to say, if you want to screw something up, leave it to the ATF. They'll definitely screw it up.
Yeah, they definitely will. They definitely will. Screwing it up is part of the ATF job, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And for some reason, they don't ever seem to be held accountable for any of their mistakes that they make. So I think that's probably where it leads them to continue to screw things up and really not care about what they're doing.
Hey, man, they got David Chipman with an ATF agent. That's all, that's all you really need to know. Yeah, that's all you really need to know is David Chipman was an ATF agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to anti-gun organizations to help violate your constitutional and God-given rights.
Yep, and now they want to make him the head of the ATF.
They do, and that's a very, very scary thing. And everyone out there needs to contact their senators and say, vote against this guy, because he is a lobbyist. He is an activist. That would be like pitting me as head of the FBI or ATF.
Yeah. I filled out the GOA thing, I think, about 10 times already.
Yeah. Everyone needs to do that, because Chipman is very bad news for gun owners. He is anti-gun. You know, and that's basically a payback for Giffords for helping get Biden elected.
Right.
It's just not a good thing at all.
Nope.
You want to talk about Virginia now?
Yeah. I know there's something big going on that's happening, and GOA is part of it, right?
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah.
You go ahead, bring it up.
Oh, the that Winchester deal. I'm not 100% sure everything that's going on with that.
No, I am.
I've got that right here. Let's see. And I guess it's about the people not being able to carry in the city of Winchester now.
Yeah, there is a city center type place, right? And there's a lot of businesses that are located right off that. And they do a lot of permitted events. Winchester passed a law stating that you're not allowed to carry on city property, you're not allowed to carry in city buildings, you're not allowed to carry at permitted events and adjacent streets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a few people that decided to sue, including VCDL,
yep,
Gun Owners of America, Gun Owners Foundation, which is part of Gun Owners of America, basically. It's our sister organization. And U.S. Law Shield.
Yeah.
Everyone teamed up with some other people. One is a woman that has a food truck. One is a gun shop, Tombstone Tactical, I think it is.
Stonewall Arms.
Stonewall is that the Arms. Yeah, that's it.
Yep.
And one is another business, which the guy would like to carry. But during permitted events, he can't even carry in his own building.
Right.
Because the building is adjacent to this public property.
Right. And now all this is coming down the pipe because of the fact that they killed the preemption law here in Virginia, right?
Correct. Preemption means that the state law rules supreme and no one can make a law more powerful than the state law. And they killed that so local places can make their own gun laws, make their own gun-free zones. Fairfax have done it. Red Oak City's done it. Loudoun County's done it. A bunch of places have done it. And there's a gun shop that, because of this, they can't take deliveries during permitted events.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which hurts their business.
Right.
There's a woman that runs a food truck, right? And her reasoning is she wants to protect herself.
Mm-hmm.
She has been a victim of an armed robbery in the past. She has been a victim of an armed robbery in the past.
Right.
So she wants to protect herself. Food trucks have a lot of cash.
Right.
And she works these events.
Mm-hmm.
So all these groups got together with all these people who have legitimate purposes, legitimate standing to sue in Winchester City, including Gun Owners of America, because we have members in Winchester City.
Mm-hmm.
So super attorney Rob Olson wrote the, I pump up Rob a lot. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Wrote the lawsuit, and we have filed it in court. So we are waiting to get the response back from Winchester City and to get court dates and all that good stuff. But we are suing. A lot of people were like, why aren't you suing here? Why aren't you suing there? And we kept on telling people, it is coming. Don't worry about it. It is coming.
Right.
And it is coming. And it's here now.
Yep.
You just don't sue. You don't want to sue in Arlington. It's not going to be a good situation for you. You want to pick where you have your fight at.
So now... seeing U.S. Law Shield as part of this, is this just a Virginia chapter of U.S. Law Shield?
Yeah, or? It's just a Virginia chapter of U.S. Law Shield. GOA have worked closely with U.S. Law Shield in the past.
Yeah, they're in a
Texas
great company.
I mean, and stuff like that. Texas is located at. But yeah, Texas is one of the places we work closely with U.S. Law Shield.
I have a friend who's a contractor for U.S. Law Shield down in Texas.
Yeah. That is something that we do look to do is work with other groups.
Right. And I mean, you know, I'm sure they're vested in it because I'm sure they have plenty of clients in the state of Virginia, obviously being U.S. Law Shield of Virginia. So.
Yeah. And it's really nice to get other organizations and to see organizations working together.
For sure.
There is this thing where it seems like a lot of organizations like to fight.
Good.
And no, like to fight each other. And we're not right. about that. We're not about that.
Right.
At GOA, we will work with anyone that wants to further gun rights in the Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
Or beyond.
Right. Anywhere.
So we have worked with U.S. Law Shield, and what U.S. Law Shield does is U.S. Law Shield, a lot of people call it like gun insurance or self-defense insurance. It's really not. It's more akin to, I guess it's kind of an insurance policy but it's more akin to like prepaid law.
Yeah.
So basically, let's say you get some bogus trumped up gun charge or you need a lawyer because you had to defend yourself with a gun or something like that. U.S. Law Shield will provide you your attorney. They'll pay for attorney fees and everything else. I have a super attorney, so I don't really carry that anymore because I want to use my attorney, and I have him, and he's really, really good. But most people don't have that.
No, definitely not. And for the small amount they charge, it's a good investment.
Oh, it's a very good investment. I definitely recommend that you get something like that. Whether it's U.S. Law Shield or one of the other companies out there. I highly recommend U.S. Law Shield. I've had a relationship with them in the past on a professional level.
Mm.
I did some work for them, some consulting, whatever.
Right. Well, just looking at what they do compared to what some of the others do, it seems like U.S. Law Shield gives you a little bit more bang for your buck.
Yeah, you got to compare coverage. Definitely, yeah. Compare coverage. There's other ones out there. The USCCA is another one out there. But what you got to do is compare the coverage and pick what's right for you.
Right.
I definitely would pick a insurance. I don't want to call them an insurance company because that's where you can get into trouble. Not right. For me, but for them. Yeah. If you don't know, that's why the NRA got sued in New York over their whatever their concealed carry protection program was. Yeah. Carry Guard, I think it was.
Yeah, that sounds like I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
So I want to be very clear, they are not an insurance a company at all.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to get them in trouble for offering insurance. The right. Antis used to call all that stuff murder insurance, which is insane.
Right. You know, just more scare tactics. You know, that's all. You got to put them scary words in front of everything to make it seem way worse than what it is, you know?
Yeah, that's what they do. Murder insurance. Ghost guns.
Ooh. Is Scooby-Doo going to come along and pull the mask off of it and say, oh, it's really Old Man Withers.
Oh, never mind. It's a Henry repeating rifle.
Yeah.
Or what are some of the other ones? Assault weapon.
Yes. Get your assault rifles, your assault weapons.
The assault weapons are everywhere with the ghost guns.
Mm-hmm.
And the people with their murder insurance.
The only gun I can honestly say that has assault in it is, you know, the bug assault.
You know that guy who runs bug assault, who came up with it, has been on a suing spree because of all the knockoffs?
Really?
Yeah, he's having a really hard time shutting down all the, like, the Chinese knockoffs. Mm.
Oh, yeah, them Chinese people, man, if they can get their hands on it, they will duplicate it.
Yeah, China is known for duplicating a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you've been seeing a lot of companies. It's all over, like, Wish.com and AliExpress and stuff like that.
Mm.
So he's been trying to get them taken down. Little side note. I read the whole thing about it. It's very interesting.
Hmm.
So hopefully the Winchester thing goes our way. That can take some time, but it's probably going to... Whatever happens is going to probably be appealed to the Virginia Supreme Court.
Hmm. And what kind of chance will it have in the Virginia Supreme Court?
The Virginia Supreme Court is like the U.S. Supreme Court. Hmm. They don't take up a lot of cases.
Right.
But Second Amendment cases.
Hmm. Well, I mean, and if it does go good and it goes our way, that will definitely... help towards reestablishing preemption, maybe?
Maybe. It depends. The court could issue an injunction, if they issue an injunction, and say that it only applies to Winchester, or they could issue an injunction that is statewide.
Hmm.
I am hoping for a state ride.
Right. Statewide would be the thing, because the way it is now with all these, well, there's not really a bunch of them doing it because most of them are conservative counties and cities inside Virginia, and they're not, you know, changing much. But with these other ones, it will make it very confusing as to where you can and can't carry, and, you know.
It already is. I mean, Loudoun County laws are different from Fairfax laws.
Right.
Like in Loudoun County, if you have a concealed carry permit, yeah, you're good to go in parks and whatever. In Fairfax, that's not the case.
Right.
And it's very confusing.
Right. It's almost like you'd have to carry around like a little dictionary of gun laws within the state of Virginia to know where you're going and what you can do while you're there. You know.
Yeah. A hunter coming back from hunting in Fairfax could drive by a parade or some other permitted event and be guilty of a crime without ever even knowing it. Thinking he's coming back from hunting.
Yeah.
But he drives down a road. And here's the thing. And like Fairfax, for example, you don't have to drive by it. You could be on a road that runs adjacent to a permanent event, but you could be 10 miles away from that event where there's no event at, and you're still breaking the law.
That's just, that's crazy.
It's insane. It's definitely insane. And so that's why we need to get back preemption. It's going to be a hard fought fight, but I think we can do it. The elections are coming up. I think we can flip enough states, enough seats around to be able to pass preemption. And it just depends on who the governor is.
Yeah. And hopefully we have a good conservative governor coming up in the next election that takes it. I know who my pick is, but I'm not going to say nothing.
Yeah, now, I know who my pick is for governor, and I know who my pick for lieutenant governor is.
Yeah, I haven't quite made the decision on that one yet, but there's a couple I'm looking at.
Yeah, the one I'm talking about, I ran into at a 2A event.
Right on.
And I talked to him for a long time. And I believe that his 2A knowledge and his 2A beliefs are legit.
Right on.
I'm not going to reveal who that is quite yet. I am working on some surveys, which I got to finish up, that will go out to the governors or the governor candidate, the Republican candidate for governor, and the Democrat candidate for governor. Also, the lieutenant governors as well.
Good. Yeah, because we still have, we have, what, till November on this, correct?
Correct. Well, the primary is coming up, but yeah, November until the actual election.
So when does the primary happen?
It's going to be a virtual, it's not really a primary.
Yeah.
It is like a caucus type thing. It's oh man, my mind is totally locked up. what is it? A convention? Trying to think. Oh man. Whatever. It's different. You have to register, be like a, which has already passed, a delegate and stuff like that to vote. Yeah. But it's already passed. I just can't remember what the name is for some reason.
Yeah. That's all right.
I mean, I was getting text every day from people. Don't forget to sign up. Don't forget to sign up. And now my name, now I'm like totally confused. All right, so let's talk about what's coming up. We actually, and you don't know this yet, I'm going to do a quick little interview. I don't know if you can join me. I'll talk to you later about it. All right. With Nick Freitas.
Oh, right on. Nick's I like Nick. He's a good man.
So we're going to run that in. I'm going to record that Thursday.
Okay.
At like 2 p.m. I don't know if you're available or not.
Yeah, I'll be at work, unfortunately, man.
It's cool. There wasn't a lot of time available. He's a very busy man.
Yeah, he is, stays busy.
So we will be recording that on Thursday, and on Saturday it will be released video form. And nice. On next Wednesday it will come out. We'll do a show as well and just roll the video in there as well. So that is going to be something that's really cool coming up. We have a bunch of guests. We're also monitoring some situations in Virginia that I don't want to really tip our hand to. And there's a lot coming up in Virginia and beyond. I'm hoping to have whoever becomes the nominees for governor on the show. I doubt that we're going to have the Democrat nominee, whether that's Justin Fairfax or whatever. But that's right. Fine. We'll extend the invitation anyway. were extended to the Republican candidate and lieutenant governor as well, and for the Democrats and Republicans, and as well as the attorney general candidates once those are chosen. That's coming up in the future. We have a fun summer coming up because it's almost summertime.
Yes, the weather's getting warmer.
The weather's getting warmer. We're going to be doing some events. COVID restrictions are lifting a little bit, so we'll be doing some events, doing some meet and greets. I will be making the long trip down to Georgia for the IV-88-88 shoot. And yeah, it's going to be a fun time for GOA members. It's going to be a halt for battle. We'll be fighting against the Chipman nomination and probably a bunch of other Biden stuff coming down, anti-Biden stuff, anti-gun stuff. We've seen some of the anti-gun stuff coming down, and we plan on fighting all of it. We will spare no expense to defeat these draconian measures. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what's going on and how it's getting handled for sure. You know, it's going to be an interesting 4 years. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no joke. No joke. It will definitely be an interesting 4 years, and it's going to be awesome. All right, man. Well, that is, we're almost here, an hour. It's been very, very fun talking to you and everyone else.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So let's go ahead and let's start wrapping up the show here.
Right on.
My name is John Crump. I am the Virginia Director for Gun Owners of America. You can find me at john.crump@gunowners.org. This is my email address. Check us out at gunowners.org. Go ahead and sign up. Check out gunownersaction.org too and find out what you guys can do to help out gun rights in the Commonwealth and beyond. If you need me, go ahead, give me a call, give me an email. I am here to help you. I am your Virginia director. Also, check me out at amaland and at crumpy.com for all my personal stuff. And with that, I'm going to kick it over to Scott. Scott, Silverback Bananas, the esteemed co-host of Virginia Reloaded.
Yeah, definitely sign up with the GOA, get on their emailing list so you can stay on top of what's happening. You can get those email alerts, and you can do like what I did and sign the forms that they send off to your representatives, you know, the pre-written emails. Those things are excellent. They're a great tool, and they're available to us free of charge when we sign up for the alert system. So it's a very excellent system to be on, and I'm glad that GOA likes to have its members so interactive in the things that they do, which makes it a truly grassroots effort. So we need to keep that grassroots effort up, because it's winning us fights, and the stronger we can get, the more fights we'll win.
All right, with that said, we are out.
See ya
later.
This has been Virginia Reloaded, a Gun Owners of America podcast. Tune in weekly for the latest gun news from the Commonwealth and beyond. Check out Gun Owners of America at gunowners.org.